This episode is made possible by the generosity of our listeners. Thank you.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. What is the ultimate destiny of all living things since Adam ate the forbidden fruit? It's time to mourn the fate of every person who has ever lived, except two. Then we find out what it's like to be a scientist trying hard to get heard, and then launch into our report on Cape Canaveral. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, verses 1 through 4. This is episode 81 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus, our Creator, and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host Samuel.
Hi.
And Stephen.
Hi.
To follow along with what we're looking at, check out the show notes, creationscienceandnumber4kids.com/return to dust, all one word, or 081. And be sure to listen to the end for the punny science joke of the day. Okay, we're getting through the last bits of what God has to say to Adam, Eve, and the serpent at the end of Genesis 3. Would you read verse 19 for us, please, Samuel?
In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it was thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return.
Thank you. So we talked about how Adam was going to have to work hard to eat bread, but we stopped right there in the last podcast about Genesis 3. Now we're going to finish it. What's the sweat of thy face? Do you remember?
No.
Okay. If your face gets sweaty, what would be happening to you that makes your face sweaty?
Running.
That's one way. What's another way?
Working,
exactly. So he's saying you're going to have to work hard in order to have enough
food.
But you're not going to do that forever. What's going to happen to you? He doesn't actually use the word here, but what's going to happen to Adam?
Die.
Exactly. Yes. So we talked about death some earlier when God had promised that in the day they ate of the fruit, they would surely die. Now here he is saying, this is what life is going to be like to you until you die. Is God saying two different things? Has he changed his mind? It's called a contradiction when God says one thing and then he says something different and they can't both be true. Is that what's going on here?
No.
Why not? Do you know? Why is it God can say, today you've died and you're going to eat bread every day until you die? How can both of those be true at the same time? Do you have any guesses?
No.
Have you ever heard?
No.
Because we'll hear sermons about this sometimes, and even Sunday school classes will sometimes talk about this. How can they die the day they ate the fruit but still live for over 900 years?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, excellent, because that means we can look at what this means. Did you know that Jesus said anyone? Here, let's look at that verse. It's in John 8:51. Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and he says, verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Does that mean that none of Jesus's followers, any Christian, has ever died?
No.
So was Jesus lying?
No.
Okay. You starting to get an idea? How could Jesus be true when he says, anyone who keeps my saying will never see death, and yet millions of his followers have died? Okay, that's fine. You don't have to have a guess. This is really, really cool stuff, and it's stuff that a lot of grown-ups don't really think about well enough, and if we did, our whole lives are different when we do. So, what happens to a Christian when they die?
They go to heaven?
Yes, in First Corinthians, it even talks about that. That is, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. It means if you, your spirit, your being, your soul isn't inside your body anymore, what do we call that? When your soul is separate from your body, you have
died.
You've died. And as soon as that happens to you, you are present with the Lord. And the Lord, when Paul's talking, is always, always Jesus. So as soon as your body dies, you are with Jesus. So when an atheist talks about death, they talk about that you just stop right then and there. Do we stop just because our heart has stopped beating and our brain isn't working and our body is decomposing?
No.
No. So that's how Jesus can be true when he says, if you follow me, if you keep my saying, obey me, realize I'm the Son of God and that I'm the only way to heaven, that you will never see death. That's because the instant your body dies, you are alive with Jesus right then and there. Going back to Adam and Eve, what happened to them and their relationship with Jesus when they ate the fruit?
It died.
Yeah. When Adam and Eve disobeyed God, their relationship with God was broken. And although God talks to them, it was not the same. God talks to Satan. Does that mean Satan gets to be in heaven, live in heaven forever? No. So God can talk to people that don't belong to him. And when Adam and Eve ate the fruit, their relationship with God died. And until any person who is a descendant of Adam and Eve, that's everybody, realizes they need God, they either were looking forward to a savior, like he told them in the garden, or looking back now, we know the name of the savior is
Jesus.
So when we realize that, and let's look at some verses here. In Ephesians 2:5, it says, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Christ. By grace ye are saved. And there's a couple of the verses. Ephesians 2:1 talks about this, and Colossians 2:13 says it, that we were dead in sins. So if you look around you and go to a city or any place where lots of people are that's not a church, you're going to see lots of dead people walking around and breathing and talking and smiling and doing all kinds of things. But if you're dead in sin, you're not in right relationship with God. And if you die, your body dies, it's not good for you. You are not going to heaven. But so this word, it was interesting when I was looking it up because I used the King James, hath quickened us together with Christ. We've stopped using that word quicken the same way. Do you know what it means?
Getting faster.
Right. That's the way we use quick now. It used to mean alive, like lively. If you think about that, that would be the closest. That God has made us alive together in Christ. So that's how Jesus could say, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. It's Jesus that makes us alive again, and sin that made us dead, even when our body is breathing. So now you can see how when God said, you will die the same day you eat the fruit, and you're going to eat bread with a sweaty face for a long, long time until you die, can both be true. One is talking about our bodies, and the other is talking about our soul. All right, so we've got here, the end of it is fairly straightforward, but it's kind of fun. For a long time, this wouldn't have been a big deal, except it kind of, it still makes sense, and it's very fitting for God to say, okay, I made you out of dust, and you're going to turn back into dust, because we know eventually a body that's not mummified, that's what happens. You turn back in the same elements as the soil. But this is particularly important for us to understand when they're trying to say that people did not get made out of dust. They want to say the first human beings were made out of, what does evolution say we're made out of?
Animals.
Right. They would say, until you return to the ground, for out of other animals you were taken, for you are an animal and you're going to go back to being an animal? That doesn't work at all. So for those who want to have evolution be true and believe in God, this verse is kind of a problem. Now, even the atheists will say that everything is made out of dust. They'll actually say we're all made out of stardust. So if you take it far enough backwards, but still it works a lot better to just take God as he is, as he said that the day he made Adam, he took dust and made a person. And when you die, you turn back into that same stuff again. Just to wrap this up, I wanted to also mention another verse that Jesus says when he's talking to Mary and Martha, and he's comforting them and reminding them of the bigger picture, even though he's going to raise their brother who had just died back to life. He had just a normal life and eventually got old and died. But he says in John 11:25, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. In Romans 5, Paul compares Adam and Jesus, that in Adam all die, in Jesus all are made alive. And you see that very, very clearly, and it makes such a beautiful picture that our first dad doomed us all, and Jesus came to rescue us all. And we are very, very thankful for that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Now I have something really fun to tell you guys about. 4 years, way back, I think it was in 2012. Yeah, it was. I had run into a young lady named Sarah who had just graduated from college, and she had decided to go help with a creation museum down in Texas, helping them do dinosaur reconstructions and things. So I've been following her for years. She ended up working with David Reeves and marrying his video guy. So she's now Sarah Mickelson. And she has been running creationclues.com for quite a while. And she had a really cool article that I wanted to share with you about how peer-reviewed research papers work. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
No.
I used to read these for my dad, who's a psychiatrist, and he had more than enough to do, was very busy, still is, and he wanted to spend his free time with us rather than having to read these research journals. So he assigned me when one would come in. He said, look these over, see if there's anything interesting. If it's interesting, then go ahead and read and give me the basic stuff. So I've been reading these for decades. And Sarah talks about how these work. So you have when people in all different fields of science. So she talks about it starts out with one that the Meteorological Society has a journal and they can submit a paper. She says, for example, maybe you like to study tornadoes. And you study so much, you learn things that most even meteorologists don't know about. So you'll write it up as a paper and submit it to this journal. Now, the reason it says peer-reviewed is because it means before it gets published, other scientists who have the same specialty, who know the same basic set of information that you do, look at it, make sure you're not saying something crazy before it gets published. That's what the peer, that means people who are at the same level. Like when you go to a Sunday school class, you're usually with your peers rather than people who are way above or below you. So it's easier for the teacher to make a story that's interesting for you. So that's what the scientists do. They have these places where they can say, hey, look at this amazing stuff I found, or what I realize is going on in whatever area. So she talks about what they are and some problems with it. She mentions, and this is one of the things, and I talked about, this is part of why I was willing to get into the creation science community, is I realized although they use a lot of big words, once you learn enough big words to understand what they're talking about, then it's not really that scary. You just have to learn a lot of special words that they'll use because it's faster. And the other thing on these research journals is they're often written in a very hard-to-read way that's kind of boring. They just have to be super careful, and they're not making it a story. So a lot of times, people don't read these because they don't understand enough of the words to figure out what's going on. I've had those. Like, there was one on Hebrew, and I had no idea what they were talking about. I just skipped on to the next paper. And it is not very interesting unless you understand what's going on. Here are some of the things that she points out that everybody knows. And she said very specifically, this is just talking about all across any branch of science, whether it's medicine or geology or whatever, it doesn't matter. These are some things that people recognize are problems with these journals and you have to be careful with. Like she mentions that sometimes it would have been better if when they were doing their research, they had had more samples. So she mentions talking about something with medicine, maybe a new way to treat people or something that they're realizing, you know what, this particular thing they're eating or this thing they're doing might be a problem. Sometimes they really do only test like 12 people and then they'll write up a whole paper as if those 12 people are going to be just like everybody else on the whole planet. That's a really small, it's called a sample size. Because 12 people, you can have something go wrong that has nothing to do with what you're studying. And if it's one or two out of 12, that's a big percentage. Where if you had more people involved, like 100, or there are some studies that are really good that have thousands of people involved. And then it's much easier to tell, is this something related that has to do with what we're studying? Or was this just an accident that happened to them for some other reason? So that can happen. And a lot of that has to do with money. If you don't have enough money to ask 1,000 people questions, you only have enough money to ask 12, then what are you supposed to do? Can you fix that problem without money?
No.
Not really. No, because like if you're needing to send out a survey or go into doctor's offices, if you don't have the resources or the time or it's just you, you're going to have a lot of problems. And she has a couple more. So she mentions money specifically, but also she calls this section, what's cool? If you write a paper or are thinking of studying something that you know, if you say this, other scientists aren't going to be happy with what you say. Is that something you're going to want to do?
No.
Not really. Not unless you're the kind of person who's like, I don't care what people think. I want the truth. There are some people, and God actually designs people like that. And they can be very hard to live with, especially when they're little. But that's part of why God makes them, that they don't care what's popular. But most of us very, very dearly care whether people are going to be happy with us. So she points out, like, when we were first figuring out germs, the guy who said, hey, doctors, you need to cleanse your hands. Use this stuff to get the germs off your hands. They didn't realize why. They hadn't seen the germs yet. Doctors did not like that. And when Galileo and a couple others were talking about, you know what? I don't think the earth is at the center of the universe and everything spins around it. If you look at it, we are going around the sun and the planets are going around the sun too. And that works a lot better. That was not popular. And even more recently, that all the continents had once been one continent. You know how you look down the Atlantic and you can see how it fits together? That was not popular. People didn't want to have to think about it that way. And if you're the kind of person that would rather be liked than be right, you're not going to write a paper like that, even though it would be very important for them to think about. Also, she mentions that it's much more exciting to write a paper that's going to make you look special. So she says it can be tempting for people when they're studying a fossil. If you discover a whole new species, more people are going to know your name and think about what you did than if you just said, hey, I think I've found a daddy one of these fossils where before we've seen females. That would be interesting, but they're not going to put your name on the new fossil or anything like that. And so it's tempting to say, I think this is a totally different kind of dinosaur or whatever. But Sarah's really great at pointing out that there's no way to have perfect research journals. We're humans. And it's still very useful stuff. We just have to be careful to not just think. And Stephen, this is especially true for you because you used to want to believe everything you read. And when it's in a science journal, it sure seems like it ought to be true because it's got a big, important name on it, and they're very careful, and they are very careful. And it can seem like, well, they said it. That's the way it is. And to remember, it could well be, but can we test this again? And what are other people saying? And to check it out and always, always, always check everything against what God says. So I will have a link in the show notes
creationsciencenumber4kids.com/returntodust. And you can check out Sarah's website, creationclues.com, because I believe she puts out a newsletter and has a lot more things that are especially designed for kids, which is how I had found her in the first place. All right. Now it's time to hear from you. What do you have for us today, guys?
The Kennedy Space Center.
So, why are you talking about Kennedy Space Center?
Because we visited it.
And what was it like? What did you like?
So, lunch with an astronaut.
Okay. What's that mean? Lunch with an astronaut.
You get to eat with an astronaut, and he gets to tell a lot of stories about what he did when he was younger.
Yeah, I heard he came over to your table.
Yes.
So, what was that like? Do you remember anything he said?
When he was flying his spaceship back, he became a shooting star where he couldn't see out of his windshield, so that he didn't know where he was going.
Was that okay? Did they know that would happen?
No.
Something had gone wrong?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Huh. Now, this, they have all different kinds of astronauts, and it depends on which day you go, who will be there. Yours was, what was his first name?
John.
Uh-huh. Blaha. I remember that. Okay, so how did he survive? Do you know, Stephen?
Basically, he just slowed down the space shuttle.
Oh, so this was a space shuttle that turned into... This wasn't a capsule.
This wasn't a capsule. It was a shuttle. Ah. One of his many space shuttle missions, because he's had over 5 space shuttle missions.
Wow, and he was the captain?
Yep, he was the captain of all his space shuttle missions.
Okay, so as you hear, that by itself is probably worth the trip. Wish I could have been there. What about the things that you could see there? Were there any that were really cool, Samuel? Nothing was cool.
I know.
All right, go ahead, Sam.
Everything was cool.
Yes.
Especially the space shuttle Atlantis that was there.
Okay.
It was huge.
Yeah, that's what your grandpa said as well, that it was way bigger than he pictured. Because a space shuttle, it's kind of chubby looking. When you've got a toy and you compare it to an airplane, it feels like it should be smaller, but it's not, is it?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
The wings are super long.
Mm-hmm.
So we went into a 3-story tall building.
Okay.
And it nearly took up 2 floors.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Just the wings themselves. So they had it laying like it was with one arm up and one arm down.
Wing.
One wing up and one wing down.
Okay.
And that, the wing that was pointed up nearly touched the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And the wing that was pointed down nearly touched to the ground.
Yeah. What else was cool about Kennedy Space Center? If somebody goes there, what are they going to see?
The rocket garden.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of historic rockets, such as the rocket of the Apollo 1.
Mm-hmm.
They had that. They also had the Friendship 7.
And what's special about the Friendship 7? Because isn't that your favorite?
Yep. It was the first capsule to orbit the Earth.
With?
John Glenn.
With a human in it.
Yep, with a human in it.
Or with an American in it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what else would be extra cool if somebody is thinking about going to Florida?
Well, the bus tour.
Yeah.
We got to see a bunch of stuff, including something secret from NASA, which we can't tell you because if we tell you, NASA will sue us.
Yeah, they haven't even told me, so I can't tell you guys on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But you got to see they're building a new kind of rocket, right?
Yeah, the vehicle assembly building. The pieces of the rocket that they're going to send to Mars was already on the launch pad because the building wasn't quite big enough for the rocket.
Wow, that's crazy because that is one giant building. Isn't that the biggest painted American flag that's on the side of it?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is enormous. Yeah, and how long is it going to take them?
I don't know. About 20 years.
What?
Yes,
from now?
So.
How long have they been working on it?
I don't know.
They probably started this year. And the lines of the American flag, our bus, which was long and big,
uh-huh.
could drive on the stripes. One is a stripes.
Oh, but it was up on the side of the wall, so you couldn't actually drive on it.
Yes, I know, but
wow.
It's that long.
So it's wider than a lane, a road lane?
Yes.
Wow, that is enormous. Yeah, so if that rocket can't fit in that building, that is one massive rocket. Now, I know you got to go inside. They had a replica of a capsule, right?
I don't think that... Well, they had pictures of what the Orion capsule, which is the capsule they're going to send to Mars on the SLS rocket.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were inside a capsule. That's what I'm talking about. What was that?
Oh, yeah. It was a model of the Apollo 1.
Yeah. That's what a replica is, a model that's exactly the same as the original. Okay. Anything else extra cool?
Yes. We saw two launch pads, Launch Pad 39A and the Launch Pad 39B. We also got to see where the Air Force keeps their liquid hydrogen. We also got to see where NASA keeps their liquid hydrogen.
What they was had, cool about that? It looks like?
It looks like a water tower.
Just a normal water tower?
Just
I thought there was one that was a circle, like a giant ball.
Yeah, it was, except it had a pole like the water tower.
Okay.
So it looks like a water tower because it has that pole and then it has a circle on top.
Okay, just with a total sphere rather than the wide shape of most water towers. Yeah, and you found out why the launch pads are so far away from each other.
Yep, because one reason, the fire is so hot that it could burn you for miles, and because even the Apollo rockets, those big moon rockets, if they exploded for 4 miles, everyone there would be dead for 4 miles.
Yeah.
And also, there was actually fuel inside the chunks of the SLS rocket that they had already put it on there.
Really? Yes. They'd already put the fuel in way in advance while they haven't put it all together?
Yes. It's hard to put fuel in a big rocket like that.
Okay, cool. Oh, yeah. Now, there was one other thing you could have done and decided not to because it was happening at 2:30 in the morning. What was that?
We could have seen a rocket launch.
Yeah, but apparently they're going to be sending up more rockets instead of having the astronauts going up from the middle of Russia to having more American rockets. And who was sending off that rocket at 2:30 in the morning?
I don't know.
Was it NASA by itself?
It was SpaceX.
Right. So that's one of the wise things that they're starting to do is have a for-profit private company. Do they use the NASA property?
Or yes, they did.
Okay. So they're working with NASA, which I think is really smart. And what are they planning to do with those rockets that they're going to that they've started sending up?
Well, they were going to send the SpaceX Dragon, which is basically how they get more food and stuff up there.
Okay, to visit the International Space Station?
Yes, to visit the International Space Station.
Okay.
And they also have a capsule attached to it, the Boeing capsule.
Uh-huh.
So this is going to be the first crewed Dragon
in
capsule.
Yeah, they're going to start sending people up with SpaceX here shortly.
But they didn't do it in 2:30 because it was just a test flight.
Right.
The first test flight.
Yeah, so hopefully in the months and years to come, there'll be more of those launches. That'll be really cool to watch. So, yeah, would you guys do it again?
Yep.
Maybe.
Well, certainly if you're a space nerd. Totally do it again.
Yep. I'm a space nerd.
Oh, yeah. Samuel, did those rockets put themselves together just by natural processes?
No.
What did it take for the rockets to come together and actually launch successfully?
Humans.
Humans doing what?
Working to build it.
And being really, really...
smart.
Smart. And we are more complicated than any of those rockets. We were put together by somebody who's the smartest of all.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Don't forget, you can find links to all the things we've talked about today by visiting the show note page, creationscience4kids.com/returntodust, to let your friends know about the podcast and mysteries.
And to connect with all the rest of the things we do with the podcast, stop by the web address I got just for you, cs4ks, the initials of the show.com, and find out how to send us your own recording. Write us an Apple Podcast review, drop us a note, become a monthly supporter, and see the heart of why this ministry is so important. Running this podcast and ministry isn't free. Plus, it takes a lot of time. I am so grateful to our listeners who have given us donations over the past few months. It has been a blessing in a hard time, and it is a big motivation to not give up when it's been tempting to. If you want to give regularly, we have a Patreon account to make this extra easy for you, like Pastor Brian Bedworth and the Academy of Christian Apologetics for Moms. Thank you. If just a few of our listeners help, even with just a dollar a month, it will help cover the rest of our basic expenses, and anything above that will help us improve things for the future. Visit cs4ks.com to find out how you can get involved. All right, Stephen, here's a joke for you. How do scientists freshen their breath?
I don't know.
With experiments.
That's funny.
No, that's not.
Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.